From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Ag science giant Monsanto makes genetically altered soybeans that can be sprayed with the powerful herbicide Roundup. That saves a lot of hoeing and cutting of weeds. Farmers love it. 90% buy Monsanto's patented seeds. So did Indiana farmer Hugh Bowman. But farmer Bowman also bought soybeans on the open market and planted those. Most of those had Monsanto's genetic engineering. Monsanto sued. Yesterday, the Supreme Court heard the case. This hour on Point, farmer Bowman versus Monsanto and the reach of a patent on life. You can join the conversation. Whose case do you favor? Is life different, or is it just like patenting, copywriting software? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Here was farmer Vernon Hugh Bowman on the steps of the United States Supreme Court yesterday. He didn't back down from his claim. He ought to be able to use those second-generation seeds.
I didn't look at it as a loophole because I'd always been able to go to the elevator and buy the seed. You follow me? So I just looked at it that when they dumped it in there, that they had abandoned their patent. If they want to protect their patent, then it looks to me like they'd be required to have to separate it at the elevator and keep it separate.
We'll talk in just a couple of minutes with 75-year-old soybean farmer Hugh Bowman, who's on his way back home today from Washington to his farm in southern Indiana. But first, we go to David Savage, Supreme Court correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. He was also there in court yesterday for Vernon Hugh Bowman versus Monsanto. David Savage, welcome back to On Point. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Tom.
So what's on the line legally here?
Well, the question, this is a big deal for the biotech industry because it involves the question of whether, you know, patent is just essentially for, protects only the first use, or when something can be copied, or in the case of seeds, they copy themselves, whether the patent extends to the later generations. And so when the court granted Bowman's appeal, Bowman was basically arguing that, hey, once you've used the seeds, grown one crop, Monsanto can't claim patent protection for the later generations. And so if the court were to buy that, it was a big deal for the biotech industry. It sure sounded at the argument yesterday that they were not very sympathetic to Bowman's claim, and they were very aware of the big consequence if they were to rule for Bowman.
This is the justices of the High Court, the Supreme Court. I mean, Monsanto's claiming that what? They rolled this seed Roundup Ready out in 1996. It can take that herbicide, so you don't have to walk down the rows cutting out the weeds by hand. It's now grown, they say, on more than 90% of the 275,000 soybean farms in the United States. So when Hugh Bowman went down to the grain elevator and just bought beans, I suppose it's kind of inevitable that a lot of them would be Monsanto's, the heirs of Monsanto's engineering.
Yes, and Monsanto said, you know, this is basically just an end run, that you're going down the street to the grain elevator, getting the second generation seeds, taking them back and replanting them. If you can do that, then what good is our? I think the real fear for Monsanto and the other big companies is that if the second generation, third generation is not protected, then the company, you know, you could spend, if you're a company, 10 years, hundreds of millions of dollars planting, creating some magical seed with all kinds of properties. And the first time you sell it, you know, your investment would be down the drain because somebody could take that seed, go to a field, plant it, you know, it gets into a second hands or a grain elevator, and then everybody else replants it.
David, this grips people because it's about food, but there are many other people watching and industries watching as well, people who make vaccines and cell lines and software. What's the relevance, let's say, to software, computer software?
Well, the same idea, which is that, you know, some company comes up with some software that you get it on your computer, you pay for it, and the understanding in the law has been you can use it, but you can't copy it. I even think, you know, it's as simple as a DVD or whatever that, you know, Hollywood makes the DVD. You buy it, you're free to use it and use it and use it. But what you can't do is make copies of it. And they're saying that's the same analogy here to patents, that you can't make copies. In this case, if a seed, you know, copies itself, then the patent holder retains his patent rights in the later generations.
But is life no different than a piece of computer software? I mean, I understand the argument, but on the other hand, here's Monsanto piggybacking, what, forever on the fact that life is self-reproducing, self-perpetuating? Aren't they kind of piggybacking on nature themselves?
You know, I think that's an interesting issue in the back of the case, Tom, but none of the justices seem bothered about that, because the attorney for Monsanto made a very good point, which is that Mr. Bowman understands the value of this genetically modified seeds. He knows, as you said, that it allows you to use the farmer to use an herbicide and kill weeds, and that he wanted the benefit of that technology when he went to the grain elevator. He could have gone to a store, the lawyer said,
yep,
got a very low cost, you know, commercial soybean seeds, save money, put them in his field, but they wouldn't have had this sort of magical quality to resist herbicides. So the justices seem to see it very much like the software analogy and not much concerned about the notion of, you know, patenting life.
Citing very likely, it sounds, there with Monsanto. We shall see. On the other hand, there's a 75-year-old farmer who wants to be able to get onto the grain elevator, buy beans, and plant them. That sounds like a pretty simple cycle of life, too. But nothing's quite so simple. David Savage with the Los Angeles Times, thank you very much for being with us.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Hugh Bowman, Vernon Hugh Bowman, the farmer in question, Bowman versus Monsanto, is with us right now. He's on the road, I think still headed back home to Sanborn, Indiana, southwest of Indianapolis. Hugh Bowman, thank you very much for being with us today.
You're welcome.
What did you think of your day yesterday at the Supreme Court? Were you impressed?
Well, no. Now, here's the problem. When I was sitting in a Supreme Court,
yes,
I really wasn't able to make any, to know what they were saying. I just couldn't hear it well enough to understand what was going on. And so I have just, from what you've told me and what
mm-hmm.
my friend and my attorney told me, is that it didn't look well for us yesterday. But I couldn't understand what they were arguing and what the justices were, the questions they were asking. I couldn't understand that. So
Fair enough.
I would just have to answer you. You ask me certain questions of what I think about something, and I'll just give you my answer.
Well, that's so, fair enough. That's fair enough, Mr. Bowman.
Okay.
So you went down to the grain elevator. You bought soybeans. Monsanto's
right.
saying that you knew darn well that most of those would be, you know, genetically engineered out of Monsanto product, and that they'd be Roundup resistant, so you wouldn't have to go down those long rows. I mean, I did this as a kid, and I'm sure you did too. Before they made these beans, I spent most of my childhood summers walking down mile-long bean rows with a machete cutting out weeds. That was a lot of work. And you must
right.
have known that these beans would not require that because they were heirs, you know, they were produced out of Monsanto's engineering.
Well, now that's partially correct. Now, here's the situation. Long before Roundup came on the market,
mm-hmm.
us farmers would go to elevators and buy grain for what I would call emergency plantings. The most common use was wheat. We'd get wheat, and it wasn't necessarily an emergency, but wheat would be used as a cover crop.
Sure.
So we wanted something cheap that we could buy it out of an elevator, and we would use wheat. But occasionally, if the river would come in and overflow a bean field,
yep.
and it was getting into July, we would go to the elevator and buy that seed. Now, that seed was never a threat to the seed industry because it had all different varieties mixed in.
True.
And farmers wanted a good quality seed. So even before Roundup came up, the commercial seed business was doing great with an occasional farmer going to the elevator and buying commodity grain and turning it into seed.
Yep.
So I could see absolutely no threat to the seed industry. But what I do see now is that since we have always been allowed to buy commodity grain and turn it into seed.
Yep.
We were allowed to do that before Roundup Ready was patented.
Yep.
And now, since it was patented, they have been able to have their farmers take that grain to an elevator, and they don't even say anything to the elevator about whether they're delivering common grain or whether it's patented grain. It's just considered grain. It's going into this the grain bins. And to me, at that point, Monsanto has either abandoned their patent by not requiring that it be kept separate, or they are forcing their patent on me.
Yep. Does it feel strange or unnatural to you, Hugh, not to be able to go to the elevator, buy beans and plant them?
Yes. It seems strange and unnatural. Now, to their claim that I knew that there would be Roundup in there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When I went to the elevator, I was prepared to take whatever came out of there.
Yes.
In other words, if there hadn't been any patented in there, I would have used it anyway for my second crop.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about and with today the Indiana farmer who has taken his case against Monsanto's seed control to the U.S. Supreme Court. Vernon Hugh Bowman on his way back home to Sanborn, Indiana today, and with us. Hugh, I know we've just got you for another minute. If the court rules against you, and you heard the reporter saying that they well might, what's the problem with that, in your view, for farmers, for you, for farmers and farming in general? Is there a problem?
Now, are you asking me?
Yes, sir.
Hugh Bowman? You're asking Hugh Bowman?
I'm asking you, Hugh Bowman, if the court rules against you, what's the problem?
Well, the problem is that if the court rules against me, it means that Monsanto or anybody else, for an example, let's use wheat now. Let's jump from soybeans to wheat.
Okay.
We use wheat as a cover crop a lot. And so we don't need high-quality seed.
Right.
So
you're just doing it to keep the field from blowing away. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so we go to the elevator, buy wheat, and sow it off as a cover crop.
Yep.
Now, eventually, and there may be even now, I'm not sure, but there will be a patented wheat variety.
Mm-hmm.
And then if they don't keep the patent out of the grain elevator, then they can claim that, well, even though we mix it up and
yep.
we let it, and we don't have to tell the elevator that we're bringing it in,
yep.
and you can't look at it and tell, so then they can say, now you can't use elevator wheat because it contains patents. And I think that since no law was ever passed that prevented me from going to the elevator,
yep.
I think I should have been come first. In other words, it's like patent a wheel. You can't patent a wheel, and I don't see how Monsanto can dump their patents at an elevator without any effort to keep them separate or without even having to tell the elevator and then claim that they have patent rights. Like I said
yep.
a while ago,
yep.
they either abandon their patents or they're forcing their patents on to farmers who to use commodity.
Right. Pretty soon there's nothing a farmer can plant that isn't owned by somebody. Vernon Hugh Bowman, headed home today from the Supreme Court. We wish you luck. We appreciate you taking the time to speak with us today. Good luck back on the farm, Mr. Bowman.
And I'm free to shut the telephone off, right?
Yes, sir, you are. Thank you so much for being with us. Thank you very much. I'm going to jump to Indianapolis right now, and Gary Truitt, he's host of the farm radio program Hoosier Ag Today. Gary Truitt at Hoosier Ag, thanks a lot for being with us.
Tom, thank you for letting me be on the program.
Hugh Bowman has a mind of his own. You hear it right there. I'm trying to get a sense of how his perspective fits into the general thinking in farm country as you know it. Are farmers with him? Are they scratching their head? How's this playing out?
I think for the most part, farmers are watching this case very carefully because it has very serious ramifications for all of agriculture. And for the farmers who bought their seed, who paid the price to use that Monsanto technology that Mr. Bowman didn't pay for in planting it, I think they're very concerned about where this is going to go. The practice of buying seed at an elevator and planting it is not widespread. It is done occasionally. Mr. Bowman does it, but the majority of farmers today buy their seed from a certified seed company, whether it be Monsanto or Pioneer or Beck Hybrids, which is a big company here. And so they understand that, and that's where they buy their seed from. They grow their seed, and they turn it into the marketing channel at the end of the year. So the practice is very limited. There's very few farmers that go out and buy their seed at the elevator and plant it anymore.
But, in fairness, he bought his first crop. He bought it from Monsanto straight up the way everybody else did. This was a late crop. He didn't know if it would work or not. He was putting it in so late, and so he didn't want to go out and pay the big bucks for it again, went to the elevator. I mean, is anybody concerned, Gary, that, you know, sooner or later, maybe now, farmers get so bounded about by patented seeds that there's no just kind of natural planning you can do, go out and get some seeds and put them in the earth. Is that weird to people, or is that just the way things work now?
Well, farming is such a high capital business. You just don't go out and throw a few seeds in the ground. It takes a lot of capital investment in time and equipment. Mm-hmm. So most farmers don't want to take the risk. If you're going to spend hundreds of dollars an acre to plant the crop, you want to make sure that seed has a chance to actually do something, whether it's late in the season or what have you. So most farmers are willing to make the investment to pay the extra dollars to buy high quality seed, knowing that they're going to get a crop. If you're going to spend all that time and money to put out a crop, you want to have some guarantee that it's going to be there.
So the farmers you're channeling, it sounds as though you're saying they might be rooting for Monsanto here.
I think overall most farmers adopt biotechnology, use biotechnology, are depending on biotechnology to grow their crop. If it hadn't been for biotechnology, this drought we had here in the Midwest this last summer would have been much worse than it had been. So farmers very much depend on biotechnology. Whether you like biotech or not, that's a whole other thing we can talk about. But the farmers like that, so I think not necessarily that they are rooting for Monsanto as a company, but rooting for continued innovation and advancement of biotechnology is what most farmers that I work with are very much in favor of.
Gary Truitt at Hoosier Ag Today in Indianapolis. You're a good sport for coming on with us for a couple of minutes. Thank you so much, Gary.
Thank you, Tom. This is a great topic. I'm really glad you guys put it out there for people to get involved in.
We're glad to be on it. Thank you so much. Let's turn to Washington. Debbie Barker is with us. She's International Program Director at the Center for Food Safety. She's also the Program Director for their Save Our Seeds campaign. Debbie Barker, thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
What do you think of this? We're going to hear the legal arguments in just a second, but your first interest is in seed and food. What do you think of this Supreme Court case, and who are you rooting for, and why, Debbie?
Right. Well, I think as the listeners should know, we wrote the amicus brief in support of Mr. Bowman.
Mm-hmm.
Our organizations are very concerned by not only just this particular case, which has somewhat of a narrow scope, and probably the Supreme Court will rule on it rather narrowly, but we wanted to use this also to kind of show this is a microcosm of really bigger issues about who owns and sources of life, if you will, and some of the socioeconomic implications as well as environmental implications of having a seed patent regime where a very small handful of large corporations are increasingly owning more and more of the seed germplasm.
Implications like what, Deb?
Well, as you kind of were talking about earlier with the computers, you know, as we would say, seeds, you know, unlike computer chips, for example, are essential to life. You know, if people are denied a computer chip, they don't go hungry. But if people are denied seeds, the very essence of, you know, the food, first link in the food chain, the potential consequences are much more threatening. So that's one just big issue of food security, which is its own topic in itself.
But you're looking down the road and thinking, kind of as Hugh Bowman was with us, gosh, if there's a patent on every seed out there, no one could legally go out, pick one up off the ground and plant it without paying somebody something. It's sort of a weird dynamic.
Yeah, and also when you consider that, you know, Monsanto, for example, or these companies talk about all of the investment they make and that they innovated and designed these seeds. And in fact, what's not discussed is, so you take a soybean, for example. I mean, it has, I think, something like 46,000 genes. And the patent system now allows for a Monsanto to literally just splice in some DNA or one gene trait, and then they own and have rights to that and control of that seed. Now, we're questioning that bigger model of if that's really a way for society that we really want to go, and for them to, and in addition to not acknowledging that for centuries, millennia around the globe, but for centuries in this country, it was farmer-led breeding that developed all of the germplasm and the seeds that Monsanto is using as its base to then insert genes and then claim ownership over. So for most of the history of this country, seeds were in the public domain, and all of the major advances were actually made by publicly funded programs such as this until very recently.
Let's go to Diane calling from Georgetown, Massachusetts. Diane, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I have an additional point to make to this whole question, and that is, according to Food Incorporated, the movie, which is an incredible movie, you are required as a soybean farmer to use Monsanto beans. That conversation, I know, is not originally part of the Supreme Court case, according to Mr. Bauman, but what an incredible thing to think that many farmers have spent hundreds of thousands of dollars getting Monsanto to use their own beans, that they've designed or they've used.
Well, I mean, I don't think you're required by law, but if you want the particular genetic traits of those beans, and a lot of farmers do, Monsanto's the big dealer. That's true. They say 90% plus of farmers use them, Diane.
Right. I understand. What I'm saying, Tom, is that independent beans, beans not made by Monsanto, they will fight you on using those beans and have fought many court cases with people who have spent up to $500,000 and more dollars of their own.
I'm losing your line, but let me take that to Debbie Barker. Is that true, Debbie, that if 90% of farmers use them, that means 10% plant something else. Now, has Monsanto got a problem with that?
Right. Well, just to say, in our report that we just did, Seed Giants versus U.S. Farmers, and we interviewed thousands of farmers and also poured over a lot of data on this. And so, for example, I wouldn't say there's a law that farmers have to buy this genetically engineered soybean. It's true that 90% of our soybean crops are now genetically engineered, but what we're learning and finding is that farmers actually don't have a choice anymore. Because so if you're Monsanto or one of these ag companies, you've spent a lot of money on your GE product, and a great way to recoup your costs is to little by little get rid of the other, even your own company's, say, conventional seeds. So many farmers are saying to us, we can't even find conventional soybean seed anymore. Most seed companies or licensed companies are not even carrying conventional seeds, so they don't really have a choice to use. So the industry saying, oh, look, all the farmers want to use this because it's 90% of what's planted is not necessarily giving the whole picture. Many farmers are saying we don't necessarily want those traits and that kind of crop, but we don't have a choice.
Debbie Barker, stand by in Washington if you'd be good enough. I want to bring in a couple of different legal perspectives on this case before the U.S. Supreme Court. Hugh Bauman versus Monsanto. Daniel Ravischer joins us right now from Fort Lauderdale in Florida. He's executive director of the Public Patent Foundation. Wrote an amicus brief in the case in support of farmer Bauman. Daniel Ravischer, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, Tom. Excited to be here.
And with us from Chicago is Kevin Noonan, biotechnology patent lawyer at the firm McDonald, Bonin, Hulbert, and Berghoff. Wrote an amicus brief in this case on behalf of the Intellectual Property Owners Association in support of Monsanto. Kevin Noonan, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Tom. Happy to be here as well.
Daniel, first to you. What's the basic legal argument for Farmer Bauman's case here?
Well, let me first say that Mr. Bauman deserves a lot of credit and support for being willing to stand up as an individual against one of the world's largest, most well-funded, most politically connected corporations. We need more Vernon Bowmans in the world if we're going to have a safe and adequate society. So the legal issue here is how much control is one corporation allowed to have over the future of food? How much control can one corporation have over what we put in our own mouths and what we put in the mouths of our children? Rather than rely on contract law, Monsanto wants to use patent law to claim a right that anyone who comes into possession of its seed is an infringer. They like to allege the point that Vernon Bowman willingly purchases Monsanto seed for the first planting each season, but that's irrelevant to the issue in this case. The issue in this case is whether or not someone who comes to acquire seed that they don't know is Monsanto seed, but it turns out is contaminated by Monsanto seed, can be sued for patent infringement, have damages awarded against them, and an injunction against their farming operations.
But they're saying he knew darn well that most of those seeds were likely to be Roundup ready, that he was ready to, you know, have the convenience of Roundup ready seeds in his field.
Well, that's not an issue to the legal question of exhaustion of whether or not the first sale to Monsanto's customer, that is the source of the contamination, exhausts all of Monsanto's patent rights to sue a bona fide purchaser of downstream, in this case, grain, or in a case that I'm concerned about, organic farmers and non-GMO farmers who are contaminated either by wind blowing their neighbor's seed onto their property or through contamination of their seed supply. And then Monsanto can sue them for patent infringement when they did not want to have anything to do with the seed in the first place, which under patent law is allowed, but under contract law would not be allowed.
You call it contamination. They might call it enhancement. I guess an organic farmer would not. Daniel Ravitcher, please stand by. Kevin Noonan, what's your basic argument here in this case before the court with Hugh Bowman and Monsanto?
Well, I think I'd like to stick to the case that's in front of us. I hear Dan's concerns, and when that case comes before the court, then maybe Dan and I will be on the same side. But in this case, remember that Farmer Bowman did something more than just buy the seeds and throw them on the ground. I mean, he tilled the field, he planted the seeds, he watered the seeds, and most importantly, he used Roundup. He took advantage of the traits that were in the seeds, and in fact, in some of the background materials I've read, he even said that he suspected, he anticipated, that some percentage, and likely a high percentage, of the seeds that were in the commodity grain that he got from the elevator would in fact have the gene that made the seeds resistant to the herbicide, so he could get the benefits of that herbicide resistance and all the things that the people who were on before talked about by using Roundup.
So he could spray that on there, he wouldn't have to walk the rows and cut the weeds out, he'd get the advantage but not have to pay for it. On the other hand, does Monsanto own everything that their genes, engineered genes, touch forever?
You've used the word forever a couple of times in the conversation.
Well, help me out here.
Well, it's important to realize that patents are very limited rights, which is why they're so important to companies, and not just companies, but small companies and universities, because they only are granted for a limited amount of time.
This one expires in 2016 or something, right?
On 2014, actually.
2014. Next year.
But the beauty of that is that from 2014 until the end of time, people will be able to plant those seeds and owe Monsanto nothing. Okay, so
but Monsanto's going to come along with the next generation, I'm absolutely sure, right away.
Well, that may be, but Monsanto's not going to go around and cull every seed of the first generation and prevent people from using that. That's the whole point. They may make a better seed in the future, they may not. You will have the choice to use the better seed or not, but once the currently patented seeds lose their patent protection, you'll be able, like with a generic drug, you'll be able to use those seeds without having to pay Monsanto anything.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about the Indiana farmer who has taken his case against Monsanto seed control to the United States Supreme Court. Here he was. We heard from him just a few minutes ago, but here was Vernon Hugh Bowman on the steps of the Supreme Court yesterday.
I really couldn't imagine them suing in the first place, but no, I wouldn't have dreamed it had got to the Supreme Court.
But it has. He did not get a very friendly hearing yesterday, but the case goes forward. We'll see how the court decides. Big stakes here. Kevin Noonan is with us. He wrote an amicus brief on behalf of the Intellectual Property Owners Association in support of Monsanto with us from Chicago. Daniel Ravisher is with us, Executive Director of the Public Patent Foundation, wrote a brief in support of Farmer Bowman. Debbie Barker is here from the Center for Food Safety and the Save Our Seeds campaign. She also wrote on behalf of Hugh Bowman of Indiana. Daniel Ravisher, Kevin Noonan in Chicago says, look, they got a patent. It's going to expire in 2014. That's next year. Farmer Bowman can use it all he wants then, but for now, it's Monsanto's.
Well, you were exactly right, Tom, when you were saying that sophisticated patentees like Monsanto and pharmaceutical companies, as the first a patent on a particular product is about to expire, they convince the marketplace through advertising and direct pitches that that old product's no longer good enough and that they need the new product, which, lo and behold, is covered by a new patent. So in this case, we have Roundup Ready 1, which has was sold under the promise of reduced herbicide use, but has actually produced super weeds that require more herbicide use. So now Monsanto is going to come out with Roundup Ready 2 and convince you that the old seed, which soon will be off patent, is no longer good enough because it can't be used in conjunction with additional herbicides that stop these super weeds. If you want to stop the super weeds, you now need to buy Roundup Ready 2, and lo and behold, that has a whole bunch of new patents that extend for another decade or two. And the software analogy, I was quite saddened that the Supreme Court made such a silly analogy. It has no comparable analysis here.
Why not?
When I run software on my computer, that natural use of the software does not produce more copies of the software. It allows me to surf the internet or what have you. When I naturally use seed for what it's intended for, it produces more seed. Monsanto knows that when they sell it to me. If they want to restrict what I can do with it, such as prevent me from selling it to grain elevators or prevent grain elevators from selling it to other farmers to use as seed, they can do that prevention through contract law. That's alienable. They can freely negotiate that, but they don't want to do that. So the software analogy really breaks down.
Kevin, you work with intellectual property across industries and fields. What about that analogy to software, Kevin?
Well, I think Dan is right. It's not the most apt analogy, and I think the other part of that is that software is protected by copyright. So that gives an additional layer of protection that we have. I think the way the court is going to think about this from what they said and from what the parties have argued is that what the replanting of the seed, which I know they use self-replicating technology, but let's not pretend that it does it all by itself.
I mean, you call it self-replicating technology, but that's also called life, right? In this case,
well, it can be called a lot of things. You can have a computer program that automatically makes copies of itself as well. So we shouldn't limit it to that. But the point is that you actually, a farmer, in this case, Farmer Bowman, actually had to do something, replant, not just miraculously have generation after generation after generation. And the court, I think, is going to say that that's a making. That's not a use, that's a remaking of the seed. And so it's not like he's just using the seed naturally. He's making more and more and more seed.
But
so
that's what seeds do. I mean, that's also life. That's nature,
but they
right?
They don't do it by themselves.
Of course they do. You plant it, that's what they do.
You plant it. See, that's the key. You plant it. Once the soybean in the first field has been harvested, then they don't miraculously re-come up the next year like a perennial flower. You have to replant the seed. That's the part. That's the infringement.
I get the labor savings that goes with being able to use the herbicide, but what does this do to agriculture over? And I get the beauty of biotech. It's done things in medicine and beyond in agriculture that are huge. But is this fundamentally changing our relationship with nature? When you call seeds a self-replicating technology, aren't you changing the very frame of how we understand what a seed is, what life is?
Kevin? I don't think so, but I'm sure people disagree.
Debbie, what do you think?
I think as you were saying, seeds are by nature self-replicating. I mean, that is the essence of what a seed is. But I also wanted to comment, if I could, on this maybe just nudge a little farther on the assumptions. I think within all of this case and within the context is always the assumption that there is some huge advantage by the genetically engineered, for example, say the soybean. And as was brought up, this issue of the superweeds has emerged, and it's a huge problem. And by any standard, I think one could say that kind of shows the failure of this technology. I mean, the resistance to the glyphosate has happened so fast is astonishing to agroeconomists all around the world. And Farm News Bureau recently reported that 61 million acres, over half of U.S. farmers, reported some presence of these weeds. And the impact of that is that farmers have to do either extensive tillage operations, which disrupts the soil and reduces topsoil, and or they're having to spray more and toxic chemicals. The USDA, for example, has said that around 26% more pesticides per acre were used on GE crops than non-GE conventional crops. I think we need to really analyze this claim of whether it's really helping the environment and all of these other things. And as you probably may have heard, right now, Dow AgroSciences is waiting for the USDA to approve the next generation, which is soybeans that are resistant to 2,4-D, which is an active component of Agent Orange.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this, I don't think one could argue, is an advancement for the environment in any way. And I think...
But we could spray Agent Orange on our fields and have a lovely crop come up anyway. Oh, boy.
Right.
I don't know. I mean...
And also just to add, too, there is no genetically engineered crop that has... engineered more nutrition, more, or even drought resistance. I mean, the previous gentleman said something about the drought that happened. Well, millions and millions of acres of corn were lost, and this was planted with the supposed drought-resistant corn.
Well, fair enough, but I don't want to rule out Gary Truitt's familiarity with what's worked in drought quite that simply, but I take your point at the same time. Let me get our listeners in. Dan Ravisher, I'll come to you, but a couple of listeners here. David in Florence, South Carolina. David, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom.
Hey.
I have a farming background, and I just don't think that the truth is really presented accurately. I think that Monsanto definitely needs to be compensated for their technology. However, they've used that technology argument to force you to buy their seed. There have been times when we as farmers have often have asked if we could save our seed and quote-unquote pay their technology fee that makes their product, their GMO product, X number of dollars more than their conventional soybean product.
Yeah.
And their answer is no.
Well, it's
because they want to force you to buy their seed.
Right. Isn't that the same argument that Hugh Bowman's making? Hugh Bowman wanted, in effect, to, you know, use seeds that weren't straight from them, that were second generation. And they said, so isn't it the same if they say no to you, David?
Yeah, it's the same thing. It's not that they just want their technology paid for. That's their argument.
Mm-hmm.
They want to tie your hands and make you buy their product that they sell. They want to make a profit on the seed and collect their technology fee.
Yeah, I get it. It definitely puts you in their supply chain, and I can see how easy it would feel that you were stuck right there. I appreciate that observation. Let me get one more farmer here. Mark in Vermont, Cambridge, Vermont. Mark, you're on.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I own Boyden Farm in Cambridge, Vermont, and we're in a unique position in that I used to be a grower of Roundup Ready soybeans for years, and about 4 years ago switched over to organic, and now... Mm-hmm. Obviously can't use any of that seed, have to cultivate, and we even started saving our own seed from each year's crop now, so we're not buying seed at all.
Okay.
I applaud what Mr. Bowman's doing, but at the same time, I have concerns because he did elect to use the Roundup spray on that seed, and in doing so, he is selecting for that patented trait. That being said, as much as I don't want to help Monsanto, I think Monsanto has a right to say what they do. However, if he had taken what's called that bin run seed and sprayed old-fashioned herbicides like Broadstrike Dual or something that is not using that technology,
yes,
I would feel that Monsanto has absolutely no leg to stand on. And there is ways to have the seed without using the technology.
Mark, I appreciate that observation. Dan Ravisher, how about it? There's an organic farmer who's sympathetic to Hugh Bowman but says, look, he sprayed Roundup. He was ready to take advantage of what Monsanto's selling.
Right. Well, I started the conversation today by supporting Bowman's courage in standing up to a large multinational corporation, but I don't have much sympathy for him because he chose to deal with this worthless product that's actually harmful for society. I mean, Monsanto doesn't allow any independent third-party studies of the safety of their products, And the safety studies that have been done in Europe and other places indicate that there are both allergen issues and sterility issues and other questions. But Monsanto doesn't let us even know whether or not their product's safe here. Most of the rest of the world has restrictions on genetically modified seed, at least labeling, if not outright bans. China and Russia, let me say that again, China and Russia limit genetically modified seeds more than we do here in the United States. And Monsanto is the only company I know of that doesn't want consumers to know they're purchasing its product. You know, I buy a laptop, it says Intel inside. I buy a car, it tells me the manufacturer of all the parts inside. But when I go buy a bag of potato chips or corn chips or some other product in the grocery store, it doesn't tell me that Monsanto's inside. So consumers need to educate themselves and realize that three times a day they have an option to refuse to do business with a company like Monsanto by rejecting any products produced by Monsanto's customers.
Let's go to New York, Warrensburg, New York, and Tina. Tina, you're on.
Yes, hi, Tom.
Hi.
This is very important. If Monsanto is to make the seeds, if he wins and he makes the seeds cost prohibitive, then and no one can buy the seeds, then what? People will starve. The other thing is Food Incorporated showed that the seeds are causing diseases, and Monsanto is the father company of the drug companies treating these diseases, so it's in his best interest to make people sick.
Well, I don't know about those allegations exactly, Tina, but yes, they charge plenty for the seeds, but farmers buy them and find them useful enough that they're making a profit anyway, so they're not making them prohibitive. Is it a hypothetical? You mean what if Monsanto took their seeds off the market and what would we plant?
I'm saying if they win and they control all the seeds,
yeah,
and you know if they turn around and say that they make the seeds so expensive that people can't buy the seeds, then what?
Well, I mean, I doubt they're going to do that because they want to sell the seed. It's their business. But you do point to the power that they have, especially with a victory like this behind them. Let me get one more. James in Mohawk, Michigan. James, you're on.
Hi, Tom. How are you today?
Okay. What do you think?
What I'm wondering is how much public money went into the research for Monsanto to come up with this seed? Two, after the second generation of that seed, do you think the effectiveness of that compound is still the same with energy generation after and they're asking for full rights? It sounds to me like a company is just getting greedy. Meantime, it's taxpayer money that funds this research.
Well, I don't know. Let's see. I appreciate your call. Debbie, do you know about public funds down in the mountain of money that went into developing this? Are they there?
Yes, I'm here, exactly. I mean, I think this goes to what I was earlier talking about is as the seed germplasm base that Monsanto, whether they're now receiving any public fund for developing a certain seed, they are basing they're starting with germplasm that has been developed in this country by publicly funded universities, research and extension programs that were publicly funded, well-funded, up until the beginning of the century.
Yep.
So, you know, the question then becomes who owned what and developed what at what point? And I guess this is one of those bigger issues, just as can one own, a product of nature, if you will, or a portion? What are the ethical kind of implications of that? And who can really claim owning what? I mean, seed for millennia has been part of the commons, understood by societies that to be commonly owned. It was farmers have exchanged it, have bred it, have cultivated seed for millennia, and that's why we have the seeds and even the commercial crops we have are based on that seed germplasm that was developed. So they're building on the backs of both millennia kind of breeding, but also publicly funded in this country for many, many years.
Kevin Noonan, what about to our caller's question about how long these features, engineered features of the seed would last? They're there in the second generation, apparently. Would they be there in the third and the fourth? I mean, if that patent wasn't running out next year, would Monsanto, are they with this case claiming that they own that seed into a 10th generation, into a 20th generation, Kevin?
Well, I think they're claiming that they think they're claiming the right to their patent technology till their patents expire. So, I mean, you can't say if it didn't expire next year, it does expire next year. I don't think the trait goes away. It's possible if you didn't use the Roundup that it might, because you know things that are not selected for tend to be unstable genetically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it probably would stay there. It wouldn't stay there. Keep in mind, all of this is about using Monsanto's technology. If people didn't spray the fields with Roundup, then I think Mr. Waxman yesterday, Monsanto's representative, said there wouldn't be a problem here if Mr. Bowman had not used Roundup on his field.
Dan Ravisher, are you surprised that the court sounded so sympathetic to Monsanto yesterday, or is that just where we are in terms of legal interpretation in 2013?
No, I actually was quite disappointed that the Supreme Court didn't put more intellectual rigor into the analysis of the issues. And they seem to get completely misguided by this investment analysis. You know, the patent system isn't about rewarding investment. It's about rewarding invention. If I invest $10 billion developing a pencil or aspirin, I don't deserve to have a monopoly over that. So hopefully after thinking about it more, the Supreme Court will come to a more reasoned written opinion. But, you know, I just want to follow up one thing that Kevin just said, which is about people who don't want to use glyphosate. We have a case pending right now called Organic Seed Growers and Trade Association versus Monsanto, where we merely are asking Monsanto to promise they'll never sue our clients, all of whom are organic or non-GMO, who don't want anything to do with that product or glyphosate. We've merely asked Monsanto to promise they would never sue us if and when our clients are contaminated. Monsanto has refused to do that time and time again. So they say that they would never sue that, but when asked to give a promise that they wouldn't sue organic farmers if they were contaminated, they balk and refuse to do so.
A whole world opening up right in front of us there. Daniel Ravisher with the Public Patent Foundation, Debbie Barker with the Center for Food Safety, Kevin Noonan with the Intellectual Property Owners Association. Thank you to each of you. Listeners, thanks for joining us. This is On Point.